This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, a proud sponsor of the Earbuds, a podcasting documentary film. For a free trial and 10% off, making your own website or online portfolio, use CFN.
That's your coupon code. Yeah. It's that easy.
We're in Australia.
Right, so we're not actually in your garage.
No.
And we're not at the ABC in Sydney. We're not in my apartment.
No,
in Los Angeles.
Everybody, welcome to episode 217.
It's pretty exciting.
It is pretty exciting.
International.
Considering, yes, we are not in your garage. We are in Sydney, Australia. We literally just got in maybe 4 hours ago.
Yep. We were held up by customs for three of them.
Well, let's backtrack because it hasn't been the smoothest of travel.
No, it hasn't.
Travel days since it was a 15-hour flight. We got to LAX. Our flight was 9:50 p.m. leaving Los Angeles on Thursday, May 29th.
Yes.
So we all got to the airport between 7:30 and 8 o'clock. Everyone's coming from different parts of L.A.
Yep, we all got there.
As I'm arriving, Andrew Garrity, our DP, calls me and goes, Graham, we're supposed to have...
Visas.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't remember that when I came here a year and a half ago. Like, I remember doing a visa, but I remember, like, doing it once I got here. Or, like, I did it online or something. Like, I remember it wasn't a problem. Like, it was so easy. I don't even remember doing it. So everybody gets to the airport. We've got five guys and...
Yeah, I try to check in. Mm-hmm. I scan the passport scans. There's even a way to, you know, you scan it and said, you need personalized attention for this reservation. So they send you to a line where you have to get an actual United rep to check you in. And that's when I see the rest of the crew, like, hey, we're having trouble.
And you don't feel special. It's not like, ooh, personalized attention.
Getting a long line for a surly employee to inconvenience you for 2 hours.
Oh,
that's
man.
What that means.
So... Yeah, I got there. I had the same thing. It took me half an hour, 40 minutes to get it figured out. It took these guys even longer. Then, once all the
visa stuff was taken care of.
Visa stuff was taken care of. Okay, now we got your thing. Now we can get your boarding pass and check your bags. So we got five guys and all this gear and luggage. There's 15 bags.
Yeah.
It costs us $300 to check bags.
Yeah. Right. And I fly a lot. My three were for free, but still, your first one international is free on United, but then the other two...
Right. And then some of the carry-ons we couldn't bring because they had tools in them. You can't bring tools on the plane, so you had to check them.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was like this crazy thing.
You can't bring tools like things that could take over a cotton
bin. No, you can't.
You can't take saws and hammers.
And literally a giant bag of them. That's
staple gun. Yeah. Oh, that's fine. That'd do a little stapling.
We needed to have a better conversation with the crew about what to bring and what not to bring next time.
We had numerous conversations about all the stuff.
Like, remember that part where we said bring the absolute minimum that you need? There's a bag of tools here. Why is there a bag of tools?
Well, we need them. No, honestly, though, I don't know how else we get around that.
Well, what we would have done is we would have sourced anything we didn't need here, and it probably would have been cheaper just to get
maybe
kind of gear and stuff.
Than paying for the overage.
Because it's going to be about $1,000 in bag costs for the whole trip.
That's true.
So. But water under the bridge now. Yeah. We're here with a bunch of gear and tools.
Yes.
So you got in this line because you didn't have visas.
And then we were ready to go, but still there were three bags that still needed to be checked. And this is where I almost lost it. The computers go down.
The United computers at LAX go down.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's tons of people behind us. They're lining up. And we're like, we just need these three bags checked and we can be on our way. So... I sent the rest of the crew ahead. I said, look, you're done. You guys can go. I'll wait for this.
Yeah.
The girl cannot ring the card up. She disappears with my card. for some kind of manual. It's all she had to do was charge a credit card. That was it.
Right.
And doesn't come back for 30 minutes.
Because God forbid you get on the flight and they just forget about the charge.
I know. It's like,
this is all about the charge.
Isn't it going to cost you more to put me on another flight than actually let me go with three bags? It was unbelievably ridiculous. Supervisors walking back and forth and say, hey, I'm still here. Oh, they're almost done. Well, she's working on it back there. It's just a charge. It's, all you need is a square and you can do it.
Yeah. They had the handwrite baggage tickets, too.
Yeah, and that they figured out. But then she finally comes back, and she goes, you need to sign this. I said, fine. Can I go? Oh, no, I got to give you your receipt. And how long will that take? Just a few more minutes.
Ugh.
No, you don't. And I left. I got my card back, and I left. So luckily, I had TSA pre, so I was able to go through security, and I made the flight with a few minutes to spare.
Yeah.
And I'm texting Graham. I'm still stuck here. I'm getting a little nervous.
Yeah, he's like, I'm getting nervous. I'm on the plane. The other guys are all on the plane, and we're like... Well,
I'm stuck for a dump because they won't bring my card back.
And because they want to charge you for your overage.
Yeah, yes. They're assholes.
Jesus Louise. It's tough.
So, so we get on the plane. Everything's we just sit on the tarmac and they're like, because the computers are down. And I was like, oh, shit, here we go. Like 10 hours on the tarmac kind of shit. But no, that got done. They figured that out. So then, 15-hour flight.
Yep.
And we land and we go through the first round of customs. Get our bags, and then we're getting ready to just do the last little cursory where you give that little form. And this woman with Australian Customs sees five guys and all these gear boxes, these hard plastic, and she's like, "What? You guys aren't tourists."
Yeah, what are you bringing in here?
So we got to x-ray the bags, and then this guy, I hear this other guy, him and her both talking, and he's got all our passports, and he just goes, "All right, who's running this?
Yeah, who's in charge?
Who's in charge?"
And I go, we bring out the mouthpiece.
Yeah, I'm the closer. Yeah. And I'm like, how you doing, sir? And
this is about 5 hours ago.
Yes. So I'm very much, I've been in this situation in Kuwait, military bases. I've been in this situation all over the place. And so I was like, I'm shaking hands. And he's like, so you guys aren't tourists. I go,
we're
a documentary crew. I go, we're not being, because I know what their concern is.
Yeah.
Are we getting paid to be here? And I said, we're footing our own bill. We're not being hired by any Australian company to do this. He goes, but you're not a tourist. I said, well, I'm going to try to go surfing. And, we're going to a friend's play. We're talking, we're pumping your play. I'm trying to get the
tea. Nice.
By the way, we should introduce our guest.
Yes, we should. CJ Johnson, folks. Our Australian correspondent.
Yes, and also a movie critic for the ABC, and also playwright and writer.
Yeah, and we are sitting in the lobby where my play, The Young Tycoons, is currently playing. And might indeed now get some customs officials.
I'm always promoting, CJ. Yeah. I'm always promoting. So if we get some customs folks here to buy some tickets.
Yeah.
And we're in the... What theatre is this?
It's called the Darlinghurst Theatre Company at the Eternity Playhouse. Mm-hmm. Right here in Sydney. It's a lovely part of Sydney, right near your hotel, right near where I live. It's the inner city. So it's just on the outskirts of the Central Business District, where all the banking and finance and, the white collar industry is, and so around that, like many cities, you've got all the groovy young people in the arts scene sort of just around the Central Business District, mm-hmm. in what we call the inner city, and this is where this theater is, and you'll be seeing this play tomorrow evening.
We're
excited.
And this theater is beautiful. It's this historic building, and they've remodeled the interior, so the theater space itself is beautiful.
Did they convert it into a theater?
It was a tabernacle hall.
Okay.
And over the last few years, it's been converted into this theater. The theater company, the Darlinghurst Theater Company, has existed for about a little over a decade, about 12 years, and they applied to the council that runs this part of town, and the city of Sydney. And after much negotiation, the council agreed to give them this old tabernacle hall and basically footed the bill for the conversion.
Really?
And to the tune of many, many millions of dollars. Many millions of dollars. And so it only opened as it is now in October. So basically you've got this gorgeous old couple of hundred year old facade of the building all around, and then within the shell of the old building, you've got this brand spanking new state-of-the-art, beautifully architecturally designed theatre. You're sitting in right now, which seats about 210.
And it's where we're going to do earbuds interviews tomorrow.
Yes.
You guys are hearing us on Tuesday.
Yes, we'll already have done them.
We'll already done this.
So don't come down tomorrow.
Don't come down. They've already happened.
Come see the play.
Come see the play.
Corner Burton, Palmer Street, Darlinghurst.
Let's finish the customs
story. Okay, so the custom story. So Jeff, the very...
They were really cool. They were so nice. Everybody at Customs in
Australia. It's just Australian customs. Yeah, it's really very nice. And it's such a laid-back country.
Yeah, it was like, all right, what do you
got? Short sleeves and beagles.
Yeah.
It's a little later. Come on, what are you guys doing?
He's like, what are you guys doing? And I go, look, you know, I wasn't going to try to bullshit the guy. I go, what? We're just tourists with nice cameras. Like,
and gearboxes. Because that's the road you could have gone down.
Yeah. And that, I knew, would have been the wrong one.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if they know you're lying to them, then they're going to be like, fuck you.
Yeah, that's true.
So I just was not going to lie to the guy. And I just said, you know, this is what we're doing. And he goes, okay, well, we got to get this sorted out, but we got to go find this, my superior or whatever. And as you're talking, he's like, oh, I'm going to America. I love it. I'm going to go to Chicago.
Yeah.
So I start going. I'm like, you got to go to the, are you going to Cubs game? Oh, I'm going to Wrigley Field. I'm like, oh, you got to go get a Polish. You got to go to this bar, Wrigley Field, get this pizza. Because I'm from Chicago, right? And we were just there shooting earbuds. And I was just at a Cubs game like a week ago. And so he's like, oh, great. That sounds awesome. And
you did the perfect thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you're good at this. That's the right thing to do.
I know. And I know.
I'm a closer.
I'm a closer. And I know Australians. And I know it's a very, you know, friendly culture.
Tokyo might be harder.
Tokyo.
I suspect
Tokyo's going to be a little different. I'm going to have to say konnichiwa a lot.
Yeah.
That'll get you everywhere.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's all you need. It's an American saying.
Good morning, constantly.
Yeah. And Hello Kitty.
Yeah, it's just say Hello Kitty. And the samurai sword terms. I'm sure that'll help. So anyway, he walks me up to his boss, and he's telling the guy the thing, and he's like, you know, you're supposed to have a business visa. And I wasn't bullshitting the guy. I said, look, my understanding was if we were being paid by an Australian company to be here, then yes, I should have got a business visa, and I just did a tourist one. He goes, yeah, okay, you kind of are in a gray area. But he was really cool. He was steering me in the right direction. This older guy goes, so you're here as tourists, right? I said, yes, I am. And he goes, and you're amateurs. I said, yes, we are. We are not a professional film. I just answered he was telling me what to say, basically.
Yeah.
And then he goes, okay, you'll be fine. And he checks my thing. He goes, in the future, go to Washington. You got to go through the embassy in D.C. if you're going to do something like this, and you have to get a slightly different type of visa.
This is so great about Australia, because we're talking about international borders here. We're not talking about a cop letting you off because you're driving 10 miles above the speed limit. We're talking about five guys coming into an island nation, and you got into a gray area, and they decided to tilt towards the white.
And literally, the guy Jeff, the younger guy, because the older, his superior was probably in his late 50s or 60s, and he's very, very nice. And then right in front of him, Jeff goes, he looks right at me, and his name was Russ. He goes, Russ just did you a huge favor.
Yeah.
And I was like, I go, thank you, sir. And I'm shaking his hand. I'm being very yes, sir, no, sir. Yeah. And he explained it to me. I go, thank you, guys are awesome. Thank you so much. And then we're walking back. And as we're walking back, of course, Jeff is like, yeah, I want to go to Manhattan. I want to go all these places in America. And I'm like, go here, go there. And then, he could have jammed you up. You get the wrong guy, you got to have been jammed up. You could have maybe even been turned back. At the very least, you would have been in a room for 2 hours. We would have got you through, but it would have been 2 hours of nonsense. And I was like, thank you, sir, so much. We shook his hand, and we got out of there.
I'm so glad you didn't try and bribe them.
No way. No way. I know what part of the world to and to not do that.
Yeah, that would have gone bad.
No way.
It's not in the budget.
We didn't get enough Kickstarter donors.
Not enough Kickstarter.
We didn't have a bribe official.
Yeah,
we didn't have that tier. So, yeah, we got to the hotel, and then we've met you, and now here we are.
And now here we are. I walked you through some of Sydney, and I walked you to the hotel. I've been to the theater, and
this is a beautiful city.
Yeah.
This is an amazing city. Like,
we haven't even seen that much of it.
The
rest of the crew is going on a tour. To actually, it's funny, there was a walking tour right by the hotel. I'm like, oh, this is all the B-roll we need.
Yeah,
so they don't even know that they're like literally doing a B-roll tour for us.
They're going to get all the stuff, all the shots we need. So let's talk some movies a little bit. First of all, now you were telling us this, since we're going to be on Monday. Well, we have already gone there by the time you guys listen to this, but we're going to...
And hopefully we'll have returned.
Oh, yeah. We're going to Newman, Australia, to meet Russell... who is going to show us around, and we're going to interview him. He's the miner we've mentioned on the show, and he's, of course, it's the coolest thing about doing this Earbuds documentary is just about every city there's been like a podcaster or a fan
who's helped us out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, we're sitting here, we know you because of podcasting and talking about movies. You know, like, it's so cool. So Russell is going to...
And we have a location for the fan interviews.
We have a it's been really cool. So...
I just Googled Newman. This is where you're going. Wow.
It's in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, folks. Google Newman, Australia, and you will see it is...
There's four lines in Wikipedia about it.
Yeah.
The population, 4,245.
Yep.
Wow.
That's cool. That's cool.
So my high school is a little bit smaller than that. I literally had 3,600 kids in my high school.
Yeah.
So we're going there, and you, as we were telling you about...
Why do they need two hotels?
It's 4,000
people. So as we were talking about going over there, you recommended this movie that we watch... An Australian movie called Red Dog.
Yeah. Red Dog is a movie that was made a few years ago by an Australian director who I think is one of the best Australian directors, named Creve Stenders. And
By the way, real name?
Yeah.
It sounds like a porn name or something like
Creve Stenders.
Creve Stenders.
It does. It's spelled K-R-I-V. So it's like, I guess it's some sort of Nordic or Scandinavian in origin. Anyway, Stenders too. So Red Dog is about a real dog that actually existed in the Pilbara region, which I think is where you're going essentially. The Pilbara is a very large mining region in the Red Desert, in Western Australia, where you're going. And basically this dog, it didn't seem to have any owners. It turned up, and this mining community, a bunch of miners and people who worked around the mines, sort of adopted the dog as their community dog. And so Red Dog didn't belong to anyone. It just, everyone loved Red Dog. And so Red Dog could stay where he wanted, and he was embraced by the community. And he used to, you know, famously go on the bus with them to the mine in the morning and come on the bus back with them. And the bus wouldn't leave until Red Dog got on the bus. And if Red Dog was running late, they'd wait for Red Dog and all this. And Red Dog would go to the pub. And Red Dog truly became the soul of the community. And you can imagine, you know, as happens, dogs inevitably die. And when Red Dog died, it was a huge, like, the whole town was in mourning and grief. Wow. You know, so the movie covers this whole thing. The movie's about
Red Dog. But the movie's not a doc, it's a narrative.
No, the movie is a proper narrative. It's like a Disney-type movie.
Gotcha.
Oh, you know, it's based on a true story.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than that, but that's its greatest model, is the sort of Disney live-action dog movie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so the lead guy, it has to find the protagonist, who's, like, one of the miners who, like, forms a friendship with Red Dog, and, of course, there's a love interest for that guy that Red Dog helps facilitate. And then you've got all the miners who are all, like, you know, a panoply of Australian character actors, you know, with looking unshaven and in mining boots, you know.
Right.
And, you know, so it's that, you know. And so its tone is light and friendly and funny, and then, of course... as dogs do,
right.
You know, it becomes hugely emotional, you know. So it's a gorgeous film. It made an enormous amount of money at the Australian box office. Like, it ended up making $28 million at the Australian box office, which is huge.
Wow.
I mean, huge. Like, a big, 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 big Hollywood movie will be making really big bucks here, I think, at around 12 or 14 million.
Really?
Yeah, so, it was phenomenal success.
Wow.
Huge, 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 huge. I think its appeal overseas is limited to the, like, oh, wow, my kids have seen all the dog movies. Oh, here's another dog movie, you know,
right.
Because they don't know the legend of Red Dog, but here Red Dog was...
Everyone knows it.
And, you know, the ads for it were great. It was really marketed well. And, you know, the television and the trailers for it were great. You could tell that, like, oh, this is a movie for the whole family. And it was, you know, and it did super well.
Do you remember what year it came out?
Only a few years ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's around about the
2010. Did it get distributed in the United States?
I'm sure to some degree or another, but it was probably...
See if we can check it out.
Yeah. Well, I reckon on the flight to Western Australia when you go
it'll
in 2 days' time, I reckon it'll be on the flight. Because it is the most famous thing that's ever happened to, you know, that part of the world, really, this movie. Like, more people have seen this movie than have ever been to
where you're going.
By so far.
So you can't really even fly into Perth without seeing this movie.
Probably not. That's what I'm saying.
It's like filling out a customs declaration. Like, you have to watch Red Dog to go to Western Australia.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a statue of Red Dog at the airport. You know, I mean, you know how supposedly, like, I haven't been since the whole Lord of the Rings thing has happened, but now if you fly to New Zealand, you know, like, on the flight over there are hobbits.
Right.
You know, and I think, like, you'll find that Red Dog, now that the film has been so successful, there'll be more of Red Dog than they used to play up.
My only regret on this trip, not being able to do a a Hobbit tour.
I know.
Lord of the Rings.
Supposedly the Hobbit tour is great.
I know. The fans have posted pictures with them actually in Hobbiton. It's like, you should really go. It's fantastic. All right. Next trip, we're going to New Zealand.
I know.
Zealand.
I'm not going to be able to surf much.
I'm so
it's a work trip.
I'm so impressed. I mean, obviously I'm impressed that you guys got funded and that the movie's getting made and that you're halfway through or whatever. But I'm really impressed that, like, from ages ago when you were just casually talking on your podcast about, like, I think we should go to Australia and Japan, that you're going to Australia and Japan.
I know.
And that, there's this minor guy in some part of Australia, we should go see him, and you are.
Yes.
That is easily, like, the most difficult part of your trip by far. Like, anyone can go to Sydney or Tokyo, but to go to Western Australia, to Newman, population 4,245, is just, you know, you gave yourself a weirdly impossible task. And I prefer it.
I don't know if
we're too dumb to know better.
Yeah, that's.
I know.
Or we're geniuses.
You wouldn't have done it.
No way.
That's got to be too hard and too expensive.
Our excitable stupidity is what is carrying this movie.
And this company.
The fact that Company Filmers is still somehow turning some slight profit, despite the fact that we're going to have $1,200 in check bag fees on top of this already budgeted.
Yeah, for tools.
On top of this trip that we already probably almost couldn't afford.
The one day I'm really not looking forward to is we're going to, this is in one day, the flight is Newman, Perth, Singapore.
No. Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, Kuala Lumpur.
Because we're flying on Malaysian Airlines because they're having some deals right now because they lost a plane. So
it's a great time to fly Malaysia.
It's really
perfect.
I know. I flew to Singapore like 6 months
Maybe
after
we'll
a bombing.
Get
yeah, let's hope that there's a lot of room.
Yeah.
I've had that happen. If there's no one in business or first and it's a weight issue, they'll move you up. So let's
see what happens. But that's all one day. It's Perth, Newman, Malaysia,
Kuala Lumpur,
and then Tokyo.
Right. Yeah, that'll be a big. That's a
like
lot
a million miles.
In one day.
It's like circling the moon, Chris. That is absolutely correct. I can't even. When I got on the plane, and you were texting me, and you were like very panicked, and I totally understand why. I don't know. I had this insane sense of calm, because I'm like, what we're doing is so fucking nuts. That I'm just like,
it'll work out.
It's just going to work out.
Yeah.
The fact that it already has worked out. I mean, when we funded, we thought Australia and Japan's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's a pipe dream. And the fact that it has, and we're here, and we're going to be a little over budget.
We're going to talk to you guys about that next week.
On every episode for the next 3 months. We're going to need your help.
Yeah.
But the fact that I just had this crazy calm. I was just like, it'll work. We're all going to get the visas. We're all going to get through. When the customs guy said, I was like, I just know we're going to make it. We're going to get through, or we're all going to die by Red Dog's ghost. Like, either way.
just don't take any drugs to Kuala Lumpur.
They'll
hang you for that in Malaysia.
No, we're not. If anyone has a balloon in their rectum of heroin, I'm going to.
It'll be the DP.
Yeah. DP.
Yeah, then you're staying there.
I'm going to do a cavity search of the entire crew before we go. So, all right. So, Red Dog.
See Red Dog. It's lovely. You know, like, you know, I know you like the baseball movie, Million Dollar Arm.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll like Red Dog because it's like
Million Dollar Dog.
Yeah, it's like a Disney movie, but better because it's like an Australian independent version of that story.
I'm a sucker for those kind of films, so I'm already on board.
Have you seen the new movie? Was it The Rover with Guy Pearce?
Got light.
Well, we saw the trailer.
We played the trailer at the summer.
That
movie,
hasn't come out yet.
Oh, by the way, summer movie preview episode available at comedyfilmnerds.com, $1.99.
Come on, book it. Yeah, The Rover looks.
That'll pay for Western Australia.
Yeah, that'll pay for Western Australia. We only need 50,000 of you.
Just to pay for the check bag fees. And we're going to have to bribe officials in Kuala Lumpur, for sure.
Yeah. You can bribe them. Yeah. That's where it's not frowned upon, it's encouraged.
Now it's going to get to Japan.
Yeah.
The Rover we're looking forward to.
That looks amazing.
Yeah, Justin Kahn, David Michaud's new film, who last did Animal Kingdom. Mm-hmm.
Which I loved.
Yeah.
And he wrote it with Joel Edgerton.
Looks like Walking Dead without the zombies.
It's what has been the buzz, because we talked about it with Will Anderson when we did the summer movie preview, but what has been the buzz here in Australia about that film?
The buzz is great. The buzz is great. Like, I'm invited to an AFI screening. That's the Australian Film Institute. It's the equivalent of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to a screening of that in, I think, a week and a half.
You have a lot of the same initials that mean different things in Australia.
Right.
ABC.
Yeah.
Australia Broadcasting Company.
Yeah. AFI.
And AFI. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're all no-brainers, aren't
yeah.
they? Yeah. but the Rover's gotten really good buzz because... You know, this is what happens, is some filmmakers get anointed Cannes filmmakers, and it's just because their films, their debut films, really hit a certain sort of critical buzz. And Animal Kingdom was one of those films. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, everyone liked it on a critical level. Mm-hmm. And so now you've got Cannes saying David Michaud is one of those directors. And right. so you're looking at The Rover... And they've accepted into Cannes, and now his films, unless he turns around and makes something crazily, stupidly commercial, Million Dollar Arm, you know, he will get to continue to be one of those directors, and from now on he'll get invited to Cannes. And so the feeling is, great, we've generated another one of those. Because we've had them in the past, Peter Weir, Bruce Beresford, but, you know, not all of our directors become those directors.
Well, it feels like, too, that he...
Can you put George Miller in there?
I don't know if he became a Cannes director after Mad Max. He might have. He certainly shifted away from that because he started making commercial movies, such as The Witches of Eastwick and
Happy Feet.
So if he is a Cannes director, he would no longer be. However,
really, they didn't put that on the Happy Feet?
Happy Feet didn't
poster?
Make it to Cannes?
Or did they put the Happy Feet poster from the director of Mad Max?
I would have absolutely done that if I was the guy marketing Happy Feet.
He might make it back there with Fury Road.
Well, I get the feeling, too, like, Michaud or Michaud?
I believe it's Michaud.
Michaud.
But don't quote me on that.
Oh, actually. I'm the king of mispronouncing names, so I pride myself on it. But I get the feeling, too, like, I don't know that he did anything between Animal Kingdom and The Rover.
No, he's taken his time, I understand. We might just have to move. You doing notes in here?
Look, we're just doing a little bit of a warm-up. You're welcome to...
All right, so we had to take a quick break because this theater company came into the lobby and we moved spaces. So if you hear Australian actor voices in the background,
a bunch of actors came in to the lobby where we were recording, and literally, I knew we had to get out of there because they were about to do a group warm up. So it really would have totally.
you would think doing back rubs would take be a little quieter.
Yeah.
But still.
That's totally the stereotype of what actors do in a group warm-up. Yeah. Rather than actually warm up their, diaphragms and vocal cords, they're all giving each other a massage.
Yeah.
That's all theater is. Let's also talk about our sponsor for this episode, Squarespace.
Yeah, Squarespace. Happy to have them on board. They are helping out with Earbuds,
yes.
The podcasting documentary. And also, it's really easy. A lot of people have been emailing and tweeting like, hey, thanks for the coupon code, CFN, to get 10% off, and it's a free trial. It's a great way just to make your own website. In fact, we're converting... we've already converted Earbuds is a Squarespace site.
Earbudspodmovie.com
and also
is a Squarespace site.
We're going to be converting LA Podfest.
We're going to convert LA Podfest. Grandmelwood.com is a Squarespace site.
It's just easier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's easier. And coupon code CFN, man. And we were just in New York last week interviewing Ryan at the Squarespace offices, which is really cool.
Yeah.
They're doing cool things, and they're really supportive of podcasting.
The thing I love about them too is they're not like corporate assholes.
No,
they're the kind of corporation, they're growing fast, but they want to be in a space to actually help even creatively and artistically, mm-hmm. which is really cool. That's why they sponsor podcasts. That's why they do what they do, to help you get a good website.
I felt like at their offices in Manhattan that it was like, I felt like I was at a creative office.
Right.
I didn't feel like I was at a tech company's office. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I felt like I was in a graphic design office.
There was still a ping pong table.
There was still a ping pong table, which is where good ideas come
from.
Yeah,
yeah. Now, if it was Google, it would have been foosball. So that's the difference.
It was really cool, guys. So go to squarespace.com, use coupon code CFN.
10% off.
10% off. I want to talk about a movie I watched on the plane ride over, Grudge Match.
Nice.
Is this a Stallone?
Yes.
Uh-huh. When I was in LA and saw the billboards, it was so obvious that Stallone's body was his body, but De Niro's body was someone else's body, and they stuck his head up.
Yeah, you see a lot of that. Like,
well, he's rich enough that he could do that in real life, too.
Yeah.
Everywhere he goes.
It really, that is a very noticeable thing in this film.
I mean, do they give him a CGI body a little bit? Or like
a little bit, and then they shoot it. You can tell they're just like, wow, they're just shooting that, like, chest up.
Right.
You know?
Because Stallone is still built.
He's ripped. He's obviously works out.
He's in his
60s. He's in his 60s, and he's been working out and taking protein supplements.
Since he's been four.
Yeah. And it shows.
Well, beyond protein supplements, he was busted here for bringing steroids into, into Sydney. Like, literally busted here. Like, he had to go, I think.
I don't deny it at all. Yeah. Like, his body looks like there's some genetic help.
Yeah.
There's some biomechanics. Yeah,
bio
aid. There's a biological synthetic aid. Anyway, this movie has some just ridiculous, dumb moments to it. Front.
It's not for you.
Hello. So there's some moments in it that I found to be, you know, whatever. It's cheesy and dumb, but there's some all right moments that are kind of awesome. I don't know, like, it's in that sort of...
Does it feel, like, Rocky nostalgic at all?
They definitely do some Rocky nostalgic. They do a little of Raging Bull nostalgia in there.
But only a little, because I thought that would be the whole fun point, would be that you've got someone who was in... two people who were in iconic boxing movies, and I thought the references would be endless, no?
No, it's not as many as you think, which is a mistake.
Yeah.
I think they... It was one of those movies they couldn't quite figure out what it wanted to be. It was trying to be, like, cute,
really, a movie like that had an uneven tone? So
yeah, it's
weird.
They
didn't know what to do with it.
You think it would have been perfect. Yeah.
Well, I guess the moment you go referential, the moment you wink at the audience and say, you know that I played Rocky as an actor, even though I'm playing a character now, and you know that he played, you know, Jake LaMotta, even though he's playing a character now, then you're instantly lessening the integrity of your own story, obviously. So I guess the more you do that, the less integrity you can have.
Yeah, and they really, you know, they were trying to be a comedy with a heart of gold. Like, they were trying to do that, and it was successful a couple of times, but for the most part, it was like there was a lot of disjointed stuff that didn't make sense. But, you know, 2 hours to kill time on a 15-hour flight, yeah. It was fine.
It
you know what I mean?
It served its purpose.
It served its purpose, you know?
A lot of age jokes.
A lot of age jokes.
Had to.
A lot of that stuff. You know, Alan Arkin is fine in it. Another alarm.
So, are we at a Kmart?
Yeah.
Sorry, we are at the theater and people are coming in and out.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Our hotel rooms aren't ready yet because we got here.
Otherwise, we would have recorded there in a sterile environment. But so now this episode, we've been in two different locations at this beautiful theater. So it's not a mistake. You will be hearing occasional odd noises and voices into this.
Just be happy that we're in Australia and not doing this episode from a holding tank at the Sydney Airport Customs.
That would be great, though. If you just put out this and started to do an episode, and you were, like, talking to the customs guys, being
what
are your favorite films?
Could you sign this release?
Exactly.
Yeah, what has podcasting done for you? So I watched Grudge Match, and then I watched the Elvis Presley classic Jailhouse Rock, which I don't know why that was on this movie's, but on this film, or this flight?
Was it United or Qantas?
It was United.
It was a very random selection of films.
Jailhouse Rock's a good one.
It's great.
It's great.
It had Rushmore, which I almost watched Rushmore. It had the Royal Tenenbaums. I don't know why it had several Wes Anderson classics. And it had Jailhouse Rock, and it had...
Jailhouse Rock is like his best performance. Like, it's early on in his acting film career, and he actually has kind of a bit of stuff to do, and there are times when he gets a bit James Dean, young Marlon Brando-ish, you know, he's got that smoldering sexuality, whereas later on, you know, when they just gave him absolute crap, like Harold Scarum and, you know, Roustabout and Speedway, he couldn't do any acting, but in Jailhouse Rock has my favorite Elvis Presley line, I believe it's that one, where he goes, she calls him an animal. Is this right? He's with the girl and she calls him an animal. And he goes, I'm not an animal, baby.
It's just that you bring out the beast.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good moment of movie.
There's great moments in this film. Obviously, the pacing.
And great musical.
Great musical stuff. It's Elvis.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the pacing is very slow. So, if you're going to go watch this film, if you've never seen it, it's, you know, late 40s, early 50s. So, you got to
be. Watch it on a 15-hour flight.
Watch it on a 15-hour
Black
flight.
Black and white.
Black and white. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It was before he became this, you know, Disney corporate entity or whatever that before when it's kind of like, you know, like what happened to Burt Reynolds a little bit. Like when you watch Deliverance.
Yeah.
And then you start watching Stroker Ace and all that
and
nonsense.
It's so different.
It's so horrible. And and this is like, you're right. It's young Elvis. He is there. He's got some heavy scenes, man. Yeah. He goes to jail for manslaughter.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, a bum rap. No, he beats a guy to death in a bar because he's got rage issues. Yeah. I mean, there's some violence, like, holy shit. And then the depiction of prison, I mean, back then, but this wasn't a popcorn movie like prison, hey, you know, like it's intense. There's intense shit in there. He gets out
he
of
gets
jail.
Raped?
I know.
I don't remember that.
He gets sold to the Aryans. No, but I mean, like, but when he gets out of prison, you know, a record executive like screws him over, and he's always like angry and pissed off.
Yeah,
and it's great.
They were trying him out as a legitimate movie actor, and it's a legitimate movie about prison, albeit a musical. But later on, they just tried to get as much out of him as possible, mm-hmm. and so he was doing like three stupid or four stupid movies a year later on, and he hated it too.
And was touring, like it was just like,
you know, you see that in reverse sometimes. Like it's odd that it went this way. Like what a time! Like they want to try to wring the money out of the Golden Goose as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So you give him a bunch of shitty movies. And then the actor probably goes, no, I want to actually do an actual movie. And they have
like Matthew McConaughey.
Right. So you would have like Jailhouse Rock would, with that trajectory, would be later on in the career as opposed to.
Well, it's interesting. It also, you know, the point that you're making is shows what it was within the studio system. Like he's Elvis Presley. So he's larger than life and everything. But again, Colonel Tom Parker got signed these contracts with him, and this is what you're going to do. Back then, this is what you're going to do. The record label says this, the studio says that, and you're going to do it. And they couldn't even break out. Like Matthew McConaughey's lucky that he's in this era where he could just say, no, I'm going to make my own film. Like it was so much harder to do back then. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, all the stuff I've read about Elvis, I mean, Colonel Tom, he wasn't maybe the brightest dude ever, and I think he was. Tom Parker exploited that, and then he's all hopped up on Percocets, and you know what I mean, knocking up 14-year-olds and whatever else. So it really, it's a bummer. He's one of those guys where you think, I mean, he did a lot of big, amazing things, but what could he have done as an actor?
Yeah, totally. But they pushed him the wrong way. I mean, the good early ones to check out are that one, Jailhouse Rock, and Kid Creole.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
the earlier ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any of the ones that are black and white, basically. But that's kind of about it, because pretty soon they get into Harum Scarum and all that stuff, and they're really terrible movies. After Viva Las Vegas, you know, then it became a formula of, okay, let's put Elvis in Hawaii. Let's put Elvis in the Old West. Let's put Elvis in
a haunted house.
Literally.
Well, literally because
well, literally in case of the Old
Viva
West
Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Viva Las Vegas is a great example because that was a commercial, and it was it's still a fun Elvis, you know, sing along race car movie or whatever, and then. But it's the only one you could do. It would be like if George Clooney just did Ocean's 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19.
And that was it.
That's all he did. And it's funny, if you watch the 68 comeback special, the TV special that Elvis did, which was kind of an amazing thing because it's after all of those movies. And it's this TV special where he gets all these old guys back together from Memphis. And he's like, we're just going to jam and it's going to be on TV. And he's just sitting in that stage in the round. He's in an all leather outfit. And he even talks about that. It's a great moment in the 68 comeback special. He's playing and they're all just jamming. And he goes, wait, hold on a second. And he starts twitching his upper lip. And he goes, oh, it's back, everybody. And they all start laughing. He goes, oh, man, I did 37 pictures like this. And makes fun of all the movies we just talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, to me, if you watch those early movies and then watch the 68 comeback special, and those are, like, the most real moments, because then after 68 he started putting on the weight and the jumpsuits, right, sure, and
there's one more amazing moment, which is the one where in a later comeback special, like in about 73, maybe it's only one number, where he comes out, they bring him out and he's stumbling, he's hugely fat, yeah, in a white suit, and his face is, you've never seen such a, yeah, fat face, because it's not just fat weight from eating fatty foods, it's all the drugs,
yeah,
and he's got quite long black hair and he's got this really fat face, and they bring him out in a white suit and he's stumbling, two guys are guiding him out because he's stumbling, because at that point he's over the top in terms of his drug usage, and they put him down at the piano and he plays and sings Unchained Melody, and some guy's holding a microphone in front of him because he's stumbling like this, but he plays and sings Unchained Melody and it's brilliant beyond,
yeah,
belief.
Oh, yeah.
And then they get him, lead him out, the whole place goes nuts, and that's where they say over the loudspeaker, "Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has left the building." Yeah.
What do they say about an alcoholic? The last thing to go is your job.
Right. Yeah.
You know, yeah, a lot, yeah, of, yeah, times it's like he, yeah, can barely walk, but it could still perform.
Yeah.
It's amazing, too, if you watch, there's another documentary that was done called Elvis, God, I think it's My Way or My Life. I forget. And it came out in the mid to late 70s.
Elvis, That's the Way It Is?
That's the Way It Is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you watch that documentary through today's eyes, knowing the drug problems,
yeah,
and all that stuff, you see the glimpses of it. Now, that movie was a marketing, that's part of the Elvis marketing arm put that movie together.
Yeah.
But you watch him jamming with his guys and you see all these, and these guys are all laughing around him. He gets mad and goes, "Oh, shut up, you jackals." Now they cut it together till it's like, oh, it's Elvis and the gang funning it up.
Yeah.
But you know, later it's, and you watch it, and I remember watching that, That's the Way It Is going. And I saw this maybe 5-6 years ago going, it just bummed me out because I saw all these hangers-on and these enablers, and you know that was part of it. I'm not excusing what he did in his addiction, but when you're making that kind of money...
Well, they were jackals.
Yeah, they were. Really were. They really, and they're just like, pump them full of drugs.
Like hyenas.
As long as the money machine keeps going.
I am excusing what he did with his addiction, because I think what you're saying is correct. I think it's almost like he got himself into a place where there was no hope for him to get himself out of it. I mean, the same thing happened with Michael Jackson. Remember they released just after his death that movie that was rehearsals for the tour,
yes,
he was about to... Uh-huh. Not tour, for the series of 50 shows he was about to do at that huge venue in London. Mm-hmm. And because he couldn't do it, so they, to recoup their losses, they released this movie of him rehearsing. And what you're watching is, you're watching the last days of a dead man. You know, three months later.
And you're watching a bunch of money people try to recoup their investment,
yeah,
is what you're watching. And it happened again. They just released another Michael Jackson CD.
Yes.
Just came out.
I mean, God, that really pisses me off.
And they're just like, that's a little different for me with Michael, with the giving kids wine, which he admitted in court.
Yeah, there's problematic there.
That wasn't the worst thing. Let's just say that.
By the end of his life, that same thing with Elvis, when you've got doctors... Legitimate doctors,
well, it's a prescription,
medical licenses prescribing you stuff that's going to kill you. You know.
Oh, I remember this too. After Michael Jackson died, like what he was, that drug he was on that the doctor was prescribing, I had to have like some minor ear surgery, and the anesthesiologist came in, and I could tell he had to make this speech to every single patient. Look, this used properly, this is the right drug. It's the same thing that Michael Jackson died. I don't remember what the name of it was, but he had to make the speech to every patient. You're not going to die because, as a doctor, I'm prescribing it properly. We're not in your own home, me giving it to you willy-nilly. This is how this drug is supposed to be used. No one's ever died from the proper usage of this drug, because he must have gotten that question all the time. Well, if Michael Jackson died from it, clearly I'm at risk here in the hospital in a controlled environment.
Well, the other side of that, too, is like with Elvis, it was like... Well, I'm not an addict. This isn't bad for me because a doctor prescribed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, and no one, and at Elvis at that level.
There are doctors. You pay them enough money, they'll prescribe anything.
No one is telling Elvis no.
Yeah.
No one is going to say no. And and there was guys within his camp. I remember watching a documentary about this who left and publicly came out and said, Elvis has a drug problem and we can't do this anymore. Like Red, one of those guys that was in, Baba Black Sheep TV show, was one of the early Memphis, they call them the Memphis Mafia or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Elvis was like, oh, I can't believe these guys betrayed me and everything. And they were like, hey man, you need help. But the machine, the money machine around Elvis, you know, Elvis Inc. said, nope. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so check out Jailhouse Rock.
So like what you did, Graham, I was on the flight and watched two vastly different films as well. because you have such a selection, you're like, no, I'm not going to, it's not like I'm going to load up on two dramas or whatever. Right. I need two separate movies. So I saw Nebraska, which I hadn't seen, and I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great movie. I loved all the subtext in it. It was one of those movies where if you just watch it for, like, on the surface, like, well, nothing happens. There's nothing really going on. It's one of those movies that goes so much deeper where, like, well, what's really happening? Mm-hmm. What does this represent in this story? And that's what I really liked about it. It was... It didn't leave you off the hook. Like, you really had to watch it and really get into it to really get anything out of it, which I liked. I loved all the family dynamics. I loved, he was an alcoholic, and even to the end of the film, he's barely admitted that he had a drinking problem. Right. You know, it was like, it was pulling teeth. It was like, yeah, I drink a little bit. You drink more than a little bit. All right, I drink a little bit more. You know, I drink a lot. So, but he never even said, I'm an alcoholic. And that's typical if you don't admit you have a problem, you know. Yeah. But what I loved about the movie is that it showed the characters as nuanced. Like, some people have this perspective of the lead character. What's his name?
Bruce Dern.
The character's name, played by Bruce Dern.
I forget.
I can't remember. Anyway, I just saw the movie. But it's a 15-hour flight. It's hard to retain.
Yeah, we're on the other side of the world. Yeah,
not everyone's named Han Solo.
Yeah, exactly.
Most movie characters do not have memorable names.
But what I loved about it was, very true, Luke Skywalker, you remember.
Yes.
Is that you see the different perspectives of how people perceive the same character. Like, you see, oh, well, he's an alcoholic drunk who was miserable to his family. And then you see other people that see him as, no, he was very generous. He would always give you the shirt off his back. Mm. And you're like, and, well, which... And the film never says it's one or the other. The film pretty much tells you it's both, because that's how people are.
Yeah, that's what I so agree with that, because it was like, it's too easy and it happens a lot. And we talk about it on the show, that sort of lazy writing when they just paint a person as this. Mm. No one is that. Right. No one is just one. Few people are just one thing.
Right.
And let me ask you this, Chris. Now that you've seen Nebraska, whatever, 3-4 months past the Oscars.
Yeah.
Do you feel that the subtleties and the nuances of it is what kind of kept it from winning more awards? Or do you just think it was that strong of a season?
I think it was a really strong season. Like, I really think, as great as that movie was, I don't think it got snubbed on anything. I really don't.
You just think Dallas Buyers Club and 12 Years a Slave were just...
It was just a strong year.
Yeah.
It was a strong year. I mean, Bruce Dern is an amazing performance. All of them gave really good performances. And the thing I liked, too, is, like, it had a real opportunity to go over the top with the humor, and it never did. It always pulled it back right where it almost got silly, because in the hands of... You know, a less competent director, that's very easy to do with a dramedy. Because you're like, oh, let's make the comedy, oh, it's really big and silly, and then you make the drama really too hard, and it really kept that even tone all the way through. So I really liked it.
So Seth MacFarlane, who's opening in Once Upon a Time in the West, or whatever it's called, The West Will Kill You, or...
A Million Ways to Die in the West.
A Million Ways to Die in the West. He would have directed a little more, boom!
Yeah, most likely. Yeah, there would have been, and there would have been more black people jokes.
Yeah.
The other movie I saw after I saw that, I'm like, okay, I saw the original Anchorman. I wanted to watch, not the sequel. I went back and saw the first one because I'd never really seen it all the way through. I saw it in clips.
Really?
And, yeah, I never saw it all the way through because I always saw it in pieces, and then there was something came up. I could never see it literally all the way through, or it was on cable or whatever there is. So I watched it. This is the first time I was able to get to watch the movie literally all the way through. And I have to say, it's a great movie. And the really thing I loved about it is that it's not only a great comedy, but it's structured in the way of a good movie. Even if you took the comedy out, you've got like a really nice love story. You've got a progression of character. You actually have an arc of characters. And it didn't take any easy ways out of a comedy. Now, people haven't said the same thing about the sequel, but it was one of those movies that, like I said, I'd never seen the whole thing all the way through, and I was glad I finally got to watch it all the way through, and I really liked it. I thought it was a really good, well-made comedy.
Modern classic. I think it's great.
Yeah,
For sure.
You know, it's up there with Zoolander and a couple of the others that, you know, if there's like about 50 movies of those that seem the same, a few of them are actually much better than the rest. And Zoolander and Anchorman, rise well above the crop.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, it's cool to see.
You can see before Seth Rogen got really famous.
Yeah,
he's literally a cameraman with a few lines in the movie.
I have an exception to take with you. With both of you guys, or maybe it's just one of you. I think it was you, Chris, on an episode or two ago. You said that Rose Byrne doesn't rise to the occasion in Neighbours, and I think she's the funniest thing in Neighbours by far.
Really?
I think she's funnier than Seth Rogen.
Really?
And I think she's funnier than Zac Efron in that movie. Absolutely.
Well, I'll give you.
I think she's the best in. She steals every scene.
Give you funnier than Zac Efron.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I really think with Seth Rogen, I thought she did a good job, but I don't think playing against him, she did as well. But I don't think she failed by any stretch of the imagination. It was a subtle difference.
Yeah, I think she's an amazing comedian. I think she's now the go-to girl. You know, I think Kristen Wiig is, you know, outpriced now because of Bride and Night, so she's expensive. So I think now if they want someone, they're going to go to her. Like,
all right, let's see if that happens.
I mean, it's kind of self-evident that she got that role. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think it's because Rose Byrne is... Kristen Wiig is coming from a comedy background. She's come from SNL and all that.
Yes.
Where Rose Byrne is coming from a straight acting background.
Yeah.
Who's now been... Like, she was... I think she was written and directed well in Bridesmaids.
In all fairness, I think this might be a subtle difference that only comedians can see. Because we're so immersed in seeing a comedic actor rise all the way through, as opposed to somebody in drama who's just kind of picking it up. Mm-hmm. Like, I really think this might be something that maybe we're just a little extra sensitive to. Because, like I said, I don't think she did a horrible job. I think that she just didn't have the comedy gravitas as Seth Rogen did.
Mm-hmm.
So
I disagree with you.
That's perfectly fine. I think we agreed on
A down under disagree.
Yeah.
Sounds like we got
I think we agreed on Zach.
Hashtag down under disagree.
Her huge calling card was a movie she made like about a year and a half ago that was a small English rom-com where she absolutely got to be a full-on Diane Keaton performance, you know, physical comedy.
Really?
Like, well, what's the name of it?
It was called, I'll have to remember it. It had the second person.
I don't know, look it up.
It had a wedding theme. You Won't Last Forever or This Won't. I Give It a Year. Give It a Year. And that was her real huge comedy quality.
Because going back to like Bridesmaids, I mean, she played the straight man in that. And I thought she did a fantastic job.
Really,
but no,
funny.
Fantastic, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she was approaching it from a drama background. And that's...
And she played the comedy scenes. There's some great... When her and Kristen Wiig are giving dueling speeches.
Yeah.
She did some comedic moments in there that I was like, oh, wow. Like,
mm-hmm.
that to me said she isn't just a good actress, which there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But I think she can, I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Neighbors.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm leaning toward what CJ is saying in the sense that I think we might be seeing more of her in this comedic lead.
I'm more than happy to watch it develop because, like I said, it's not like she stunk the place up. Like I said, it was a subtle difference.
Paul Rudd did the same thing. He was absolute, normal, straight, dramatic actor.
Right.
And then he suddenly took a left turn and only did comedy.
Right.
Meryl Streep famously turned 40 and said, I'm only going to do comedies from now on in, and just started doing comedies and started singing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have done it. Paul Rudd's not the only one. Someone else recently has taken like a major turn into comedy and left all the stuff behind. It'll come to me once again. I think it's kind of an action hero guy who started.
Oh, Sylvester Stallone.
All right, cool, guys. Well, I think that's pretty much our show.
Absolutely. So it's a wait and see on Ms. Rose Byrne.
Wait and see on Ms. Rose Byrne.
Let's see the next movie.
I've seen one film that's opening, I guess, in the States that you've seen too, I think. Filth is opening.
Oh, yeah. We completely agreed on that movie.
It.
Yeah, it was a terrible film. And it was funny, when we talked about it on the podcast, then CJ sent a review. And I'm like, oh, I'm curious to see what he thought of it. We hit the exact same points, had the exact same reaction. This was a terrible movie. It was a waste of talent, and also a movie that had literally no idea what it wanted to be.
Yeah, you literally talk about tone a lot, and this film had the worst tone. It's like every actor was directed differently. They're like, okay, you're in a movie where everyone's over the top, but you're in a drug movie.
That's exactly what it was.
And then they've all got scenes together.
Yeah, yeah. See, I would say CJ and I agree 90% of the time.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, another one who made the shift into comedy? Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, yeah, he was...
Total straight leading
sci-fi guy.
Yeah, and then totally, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Naked Gun. And one of his calling cards with comedy is that he would play it so straight.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. But his timing was, you know, yeah. phenomenal.
James Franco is kind of, too, is kind of...
Yeah, let's not get crazy.
Yeah. I thought he was the funniest. I thought he was the funniest in that very funny movie.
James Franco is very funny.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's funny
he was
in
really
that.
Good. He's a good actor. It's the thing about James Franco though is you got to get the right role for him. Yeah. Like if you miscast him, like Oz the Great and Powerful, it's like oh my god, he's the completely wrong.
My
for
fear
role.
With him. Is well aside from him sexting teenagers
yeah.
is my fear with him is
I have
that,
a bigger fear I have a daughter
yeah, yeah. yeah. is he might fall into Johnny Depp territory of suddenly thinking he's this brilliant comedian and doing all these comedic parts and you're like ugh enough like that's my fear with him is he's gonna think that he's that
right
but I don't know
well we'll see what happens with him but yeah I've been enjoying his work lately, I think, that This Is the End was such a great movie.
I thought Dave Franco, his little brother, literally his little brother,
yeah.
As he makes the sign for a little man, I thought it was really funny in Neighbours. I thought he was better than Zac Efron.
Yeah, I thought they both were flat. That's where we'll part ways on Neighbours.
I think
they
liked it a lot more than
you. Yeah. CJ loved it.
I enjoyed it. I laughed out loud a lot.
All right, guys. Well, that's our show. So fun. Our first ever podcast.
From Sydney, Australia.
From Sydney, Australia. This is our first ever international podcast. We've never done one in another country.
No, that's true.
We've never been to Canada or the Caribbean or something like that.
Not yet.
First ever international show wow. recorded on a Zoom in two different locations.
Yes. Hopefully you'll be able to find the file.
Yeah, this might be just for us.
Yeah.
And this is dropping on Tuesday.
Let's hope.
Can I plug my play?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Come on down and see my play, The Young Tycoons, if you live in Sydney. It's playing until June 15th at the Darlinghurst Theatre Company at the Eternity Theatre, which is on the corner of Burton Street and... Palmer Street in East Sydney, one block down from Taylor Square. It's really funny, really funny. Go to darlinghursttheatre.com. The boys are going to be seeing it.
Now, when you're listening to it, we've already seen it and we loved it.
We love it. And support live theater, yes. You guys. Like, it's a very cool thing. Like, Sydney, the 5 hours of it that I've seen, I'm digging it. So yeah. Come out and support.
And the rain stopped just in time for us to get B-roll.
So great.
That's true.
And also, CJ has reviews on the site. So go to Comedy
Some Film. Great reviews.
Some great reviews. Completely different point of view. Also, where can people find you online and listen to your podcast?
Twitter at CJ Movieland or at CJ Sydney. And look for the Movieland Facebook page. That's my radio show and podcast. Find the podcast Movieland on iTunes and listen to that. You'll also find a few episodes now with Graham and Chris on it.
Yeah, I think this is your third one, right?
Yeah.
Third mm-hmm. one. So...
a bit long in the tooth.
So yeah, and we're interviewing CJ for the documentary too. So yes, we're gonna talk about that. That's gonna be awesome. All right, guys, thank you so much, and thank you for following us on this crazy international journey and being patient with us releasing episodes and all this other stuff.
And like we said, summer movie preview is available. It's not quite in iTunes yet, but it'll be there probably in another week or two.
I'd say maybe three.
Yeah, okay.
Since we still got to go to Japan.
But you can get it right now at comedyfilmnerds.com. Go into the store. It's $1.99. It will download. And we're paying about $1,000 in check bag fees this trip. So if you could buy it, that would be great. And here's the one thing I want to say about it is there is a surprise ending for the Leonard Maltin game in the in the show. And Will Anderson and Doug Benson are on the show, and it's a great episode.
It's a lot of fun, and we play...
movie trailers for the first time.
We screened actual trailers for the live audience, but you can hear the audio on them, and we'll tell you, and we say what the movie is, so if you wanted to, you could stop...
and cue your own trailer up and watch it
So I think there's five movie trailers, and that's something we're going to start doing in more live shows, because everybody there loved it, so we're going to keep doing it. I will be headlining the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana, June 12th through 14th. On Saturday, June 14th, at the Comedy Attic, Static. We will be doing our last session of Earbuds fan interviews.
Wow.
Yeah. And then
until the podcast festival.
Until the festival, which of course
will be the last week of filming.
Yeah.
Because we're exhausted and we'll be out of money.
Yeah. Well, we're already
out of money.
So, LA Podfest, of course, is September 26th to the 28th. Tickets are at lapodfest.com. Thank you guys so much for all of your support with this. And Earbuds is going to be an amazing film. Thank you so much again to CJ Johnson, our guest, and finding us this theater to shoot the interviews in. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Down under.
Han shot a dingo first.
Red dog.